Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. An aviation expert once told me that the three most useless things in aviation are the runway behind you, the altitude above you, and the fuel you left behind. Well, on Tuesday night, Murray Hamer, a pilot flying a Cessna 210 Centurion, experienced just how useless that left-behind fuel really is. Murray was flying the American-registered aircraft to Kitimat for a friend, but ran out of fuel near Smithers and had to make an emergency landing. When he picked up the aircraft to take it to Kitimat, he checked the fuel gauges to see how much fuel was on board. But in classic Gimli glider fashion, he thought the gauges read 90 gallons of fuel. But this aircraft's gauges actually read in pounds, which is significantly less fuel. 40 minutes after departure, en route to Kitimat, the engine started to quit from lack of fuel. He switched to the other tank, which had 40 minutes of fuel remaining, and elected to fly to Smithers instead of going through the mountain passes to Kitimat with low fuel. This turned out to be a wise decision, as a few minutes away from landing at the Smithers Airport, the aircraft completely ran out of fuel. Acting fast, Hamer surveyed the situation and spotted a good field to land in, but moments later saw the nearby Highway 16 near Raymond Road had no traffic on it and was more suitable to make a safe landing, which he did without issue. Here's CSEK community reporter David McTavish speaking to Hamer from Highway 16.
So what happened was, I was going headed for the pass, and I was burning out one tank, and I was timing it. It went for 40 minutes, and I ran out of fuel. I thought, well, I'm not going through the pass.
No.
I'm just going to head for Smithers. So I started heading for Smithers, switched to the other tank. It had the same amount of fuel showing on that gauge. And, I started going for Smithers, and like I said, 15 minutes later, she ran out of fuel, just like 3 minutes short of the runway.
Yeah, lucky, lucky stretch of highway.
Yeah, there's a field up here I looked at, and then I saw this big open space on the highway, and I decided to come here.
No doubt.
It's a lot better area to land on. There was not much traffic at 6 o'clock in the evening, so it worked out pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
Great, well, thanks.
When the engine quit, Hamer radioed the Smithers Airport Tower to alert them of his emergency landing, who then contacted RCMP to meet him at the scene as soon as possible. Officer Law was one of those officers on the scene.
Yeah, so there was an emergency landing of a Cessna 210 aircraft due to it running out of fuel mid-flight. And I would just say that the successful emergency landing of the Cessna highlights the importance of proper fuel management and the effectiveness of emergency response measures. And at this point, further investigation will be conducted to understand the causes of fuel exhaustion.
Landed safely and everyone's okay?
Yeah, landed safely without injury, and no property damage occurred, and there are no incidents with any vehicles on the highway. Investigation will be ongoing just into the causes of the aircraft running out of fuel mid-flight.
Was it the pilot that then called the RCMP? How did the RCMP find out about it?
Yeah, the pilot reported through their regular reporting protocols to the Smithers Tower at the airport, and then that information was in turn relayed to us.
And was the highway shut down then? It must have been.
Yeah, it was shut down probably for no more than about 20 minutes at the time.
Oh, wow. Acting fast.
My name is Graham Pohl. I live in the Kispiox Valley, north of Hazelton. Been here 25 years. Before that, I lived in the Southern Rockies, Yoho and Banff National Parks. And there I started a career writing guidebooks to the Rockies, has since branched out into history, Rockies history, railway history, fur trade history, and a couple of novels. I worked as a paramedic for 32 years. So I had that as a sort of sideline to my writing work. And as part of my writing work, I packed a camera with me everywhere I went, starting in about 1981. Mm-hmm. So I've got about 40 years worth of photographs taken in the process of doing field work for books and research for books and just visiting lots of wild places in the mountains of Alberta and BC.
So I guess being a photographer then was more a necessity to document so that you had a picture for what you were writing about, or were they equally a passion for you, writing and photography?
Yeah, they were equal passions for sure. And yeah, the documenting things, the guidebooks get really detailed on trails about a particular species of wildlife you're likely to encounter, or a particular plant or tree or whatever it is. And I would hike the trail, note those things, and often take photographs right there of that particular thing in that place that would then end up in the book. Where it describes that thing in that place. So there was a real integrity of the written topic and the visual thing.
What was your first or your earliest memory of being in awe of your landscape that you can think that you thought, I want to share this with people?
It didn't lead right away to the sharing, but the first time I came to the Rockies, I was living in Toronto at the time. I came out in 1982 for the summer. I was expecting to get into Banff, but I don't know, I think it was 10 in the morning and the bus ran ahead of that. And I got into Banff at about 2 in the morning and got off in the dark, and it was raining lightly and it was clouds everywhere. I was looking around thinking, where are the mountains? And through that murk, I guess there was a bit of moonlight behind the clouds parted, and there was a mountain way higher up than I expected to see it. And that just struck me, like there was some magic there, and I was drawn to a place that I hadn't yet experienced. But that first murky view of the mountains turned out to be significant for me. The sharing part came more from an interest in history. I was really interested in the mountaineering history of the Rockies, which goes back to roughly the mid-1880s, the first kind of European contact where the peaks started to get trundled. And I followed in the footsteps of a lot of those original accounts that were published in the 1890s and early 1900s and 1910s, and could see how the landscape had changed even since those descriptions were made a century earlier, 80, 90 years earlier. So it came from that. I had a few articles published that way. And then there's a road called the Icefields Parkway, which leads from Lake Louise to Jasper, 240 mm-hmm. kilometers long. And I spent a lot of time doing trails and mountains off that road, and then thought, why not write a guidebook to the road itself? Because it offers so much for visitors. And I took that to a publisher, and the publisher said, this is great. I want you to do a book on the whole Rockies, just like this. So that's, I just walked into, it could have been anybody who walked through the door on a particular day, but it happened to be me. And that started my published writing career. So I was very fortunate that way. And then that I was really immersed in the Rockies for a better part of 15, 16 years. And then we moved to northern BC here, northwestern BC. And I transported that interest in mountain landscapes here. And of course, the history and the everything is different, very different. The geology, the botany, everything is different. Mm-hmm. So I was a bit of a fish out of water in terms of the knowing side of things, and still am. But the things I'd learned about traveling in the mountains and taking care of equipment and that kind of stuff in the mountains just obviously transported here. So I carried on a bit in that way here. Haven't done any books on this area and really don't plan to, but I still get out. We get out as a family and I take my camera and get images that way. Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. briefly before we get into your exhibit, your photography exhibit, but you're a member of the Kispiox Valley Community Center Association. And correct, yeah. You were part of the association that spoke out and also made a declaration against the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission, or PRGT, pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the declaration was not specific to that pipeline. It was for that kind of industrial presence. And that pipeline is now the fork that's poking us, representing that industrial presence. Yeah.
Just giving a little context to your involvement and your care for this environment that you've been documenting and writing about. Is there an immediacy now to when you view this landscape and wanting to document this part of the world, and let's just call it BC. It doesn't even have to be specifically the Bulkley Valley or the Kispiox Valley, but do you feel there's an immediacy to document it now before you see industry? There's already industry here, but before you see more industry take over?
And I have been doing that sometimes intentionally, and sometimes, you get to a certain place and you can see a sweep of the land that could be intruded upon by a pipeline. And so I take images of that. There is an immediacy to capture some of these things, and to also live in the knowledge of being alongside rivers that still have wild salmon and all the processes that are dependent on that side of the ecology. Because, with a disaster in the Skeena or the Kiss or the Bulkley watershed from pipeline construction, that could be lost irretrievably.
So, Graham, I would love to hear about the show. So I did get a sneak peek at some of the images that are going to be at your show. But yeah, please tell me and our listeners about your upcoming show.
I'm calling it Between Worlds, and it's going to be a series of displayed canvas prints at the Misty Rivers Gallery in New Hazelton, BC. The show opens on November 1st and runs for the month of November. The opening night is going to be on Thursday, November 7th at 7 p.m. in the gallery. And as part of that, I'll be giving a short talk on some of the images and just a little bit about my view on what photography is, because photography in the 40 years that I've been doing it has changed from something being a geekish pastime to where now everybody is a photographer. The camera power that is available to anybody with a phone, let alone anybody with a camera, is phenomenal. The photos themselves are a real mishmash. Some come from the Rockies. I think the oldest one actually is 1988. And then there's a lot that sort of are fairly recent within the last 3 or 4 years of just the out and abouts in the Hazelton, Smithers, Telqua area, some along the Skeena River. And it really struck me after the fact, after my wife Marnie and I chose the images to go on the program, how many birds there are in the images. That wasn't intentional, but there are a lot of powerful images of birds literally caught on the wings. And when you start to look for those kind of things and slow your eyes down, you'll start to see birds looking at you from the woods that you would have just walked past, for instance, or you just happen to move your head and catch one doing some stunt, like a raven doing a barrel roll or something. And if your camera's in your hand, which is another part of my approach to photography, is, and I often lose at this one, is, oh, my camera's still in the bag. It's not in my hand.
Yeah.
You might get the shot.
When I was looking through them, the one that caught me was it what it's called Raven Descends, and it just feels like one of those moments where it feels like you're framing a photo of this mountain and a bird kind of photobombed you.
There's, and I'm going to show the sequence of photos in the opening night that led to that photograph. And most people will look at it and go, that's fake. So there's a trail in Old Hazelton on the riverbank. It's the bank that's built up to prevent flooding. And the power line, the phone line, is fairly low down there when you're up on this levee. And we were walking along there, going out to the point at Gitmax and at Kassan. And a couple of ravens were sitting on the phone line. And then I waited, and the one raven took off towards me. But the other raven did one of those little hops and then spread its wings and did this momentary glide. And I got a shot of it doing that. And then I got another shot of it lower down. But I cropped the photo to get this square with the raven looking like this giant thing falling out of the sky with the peak in the background. It's not a manipulation of the photo, it's just a crop and an enlargement. It really did happen.
I just wanted to finish up with if you can choose one of your images in your upcoming show and maybe describe the image and the kind of the inspiration behind it.
So one of the images in the show is called Embers of the Day, and the peak that is center, most people call it Mount Tomlinson, and it is part of Mount Tomlinson, but it's the westernmost peak of a mountain that has something like 13 summits, and the true one is like way east and out of view in this photo. This particular photograph was taken about a 5-minute walk from my house, and in the wintertime, which is when the photo was taken, you can actually see the peak through the trees on our property, but there's a great view of it from the riverbank, not far from our house. And so I often go to that riverbank at sunset, all times of the year, to see what happens. And this was one of those days. Mount Tomlinson's got a fresh plastering of late winter snow, and the sky behind it is really dark, except there's a couple of little puffy tufts of cumulus that are catching the light behind it. And then there's the alpenglow itself from the sun, which is filtered by the sun pass, the rays passing through different dust and moisture and whatever. And sometimes it'll be pink, sometimes it'll be orange, sometimes it'll be whatever. And this particular night, it was a soft golden yellow. And it really looks like the mountain is glowing from within. And I've seen this same view. I've seen it like blood red. I've seen it orange. I've seen it pink. But this one just seems to have a life. And part of it's to do, I think, with the fact that the clouds in behind are catching a bit of light. If that was totally dark, you'd think, ooh, it's almost like it's too spooky or something. It was a bit unsettling. But it just seems this wave of the sunset is moving across the peaks and just lighting them up, and the clouds give it a little bit of animation almost. So I often go to that spot, and I'll be out there for an hour, and I've shot sunrises and moonrises, especially. The moon comes up over these peaks at sunset, and you can get some spectacular arrangements of light and objects in the sky. So yeah, that's a favorite spot. Yeah, enjoyed taking that photograph.
It's really beautiful, and that's a really apt description that it looks like it's glowing from within. So Graham, I just wonder, you don't have to have an answer to this, but for the people who are listening right now, what would be a challenge that you would like to give to get people excited about looking at the world with a different perspective?
Just touching back to the photograph we just described, one thing that is great to do is go to the same place at different times of the day or different times of the year or whatever. Just revisit places and see how they change with the seasons. And that will translate into you seeing other aspects of the landscape as almost like time lapse, like deeper on the temporal scale. Because the trap with snapshot photography, taking gazillions of things, is just, oh, that's my moment, and it's gone. And there is some value in having those moments, obviously, especially if you're sharing something special with a friend or whatever. But in terms of living in a place, and I guess honoring it is a way of saying it, having a longer term connection, and if photography is a way for you to do that, of revisiting the same place and taking images. And sometimes, like, I'll go to the riverbank that I just described, and the sunset will be an absolute dud. A bank of cloud will move in at the critical moment, and the moon's coming up, and cloud goes across it. And I've had that happen. It's like, oh, well, it's just like, there'll be another day where it's like, I've actually sprinted from the house because I could see the colors starting to happen. Grab my tripod and sprint to that riverbank. And then, oh, I forgot, it's the full moon night. And there's the moon sitting right over the peak or something. So there's just all kinds of different ways of experiencing the landscape. And some will be gifts, like that was. And some you will calculate and come away with something good. And some you'll calculate and, hey, it didn't work out, but that's life, right? And you don't have to show it necessarily to anyone. It just sort of deepens your own appreciation, which is a totally valid and valuable thing to do.
Absolutely. This has been so fun to speak with you. I just really encourage listeners to check out Between Worlds, and it's opening at the Misty Rivers Gallery in New Hazelton on November 1st. So check it out in November. And if you want to hear Graham Pohl, the photographer who I'm speaking to right now, if you want to hear him speak on the topic, make sure that you're there on November 7th for the grand opening.
Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.